Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Regan Bach, the co-founder of Better, Faster, Further, and super excited to be here today. This is podcast number 6 for us. In some ways, I can't believe it's 6 already. And in others, I'm like, holy cow, it's only 6, but we're getting there. We're getting there. Building momentum. I love it. Super excited to be here today. Hopefully, folks got a chance to listen to our last podcast with Chad Crabtree, who heads up the renewables division for Ulteg. Really interesting and kind of informative discussion with him about the energy space and some of his professional and personal trajectory, as well as what's coming down the pike for he and that company. Super exciting stuff coming down the next 10 to 20 years in the energy space for sure. But very excited to have our guest today. With me is my colleague, Adam Odosky. Adam, how are you?
I'm doing great, Regan. Thanks. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Once again in Salida, Colorado?
Yep, you bet.
And more snow, less snow?
Yeah, more snow, but mostly in the mountains, not so much in town, but the mountains are right outside of town. So it's kind of nice to see the storm surrounding the mountains, and we're, you know, dry in the valley. It's great.
In all honesty, I think that's perfect, right? The mountains get dumped on, and your driveway, you don't have to shovel every morning. So
100%.
That's great. Yeah. Very excited to have our guest today, Aaron Prevo. Hello, Aaron. How are you?
I'm great. How's everybody doing?
Excellent. And where are you?
I am currently in Ogden, Utah, just a little north of Salt Lake City. That's similar awesome. Snow situation, Adam. I barely had to shovel. We've got great snow in the mountains here. It's been a great start.
That's the way to have it.
Yep. Love it. It's perfect.
I want both Colorado and Utah to just get dumped on with snow this winter. It's we need it for more reasons than just the skiing, for sure. Yes. Aaron, thanks so much for being here. Aaron, just as a little snapshot, and then I'll hand it over to Adam to share a little bit more context around his exposure to Aaron. But Aaron currently is a customer success director at Cisco. And Aaron, correct me if I'm wrong, you've been there almost 10 years. Is that correct?
That's right. I think this summer it'll be about 10 years, which is amazing. Time absolutely flies
by. That's awesome. And preceding that, a big stint at British Telecom, and you were at Bearing Point for a while. So lots of high quality organizations to be a part of, and meaningful tenures in at least the last two, for sure.
I've been really fortunate to have the career that I have. It's really not a plan that I went out and said I'm going to work for these companies, but it's amazing how things just kind of come together. And you're right, I've been at most of these companies for quite some time, and it's just been a great opportunity to work at all of them.
I love it. Well, Adam, I'm going to hand it over to you just to share a little background and context about how you two originally connected. And then I'd love to get Aaron's voice in here and have him share kind of his backstory as well.
Sounds good. So, following up on your theme, Aaron, of being unplanned, Aaron and I met during the Moab 240 race. Aaron was also racing in Moab 240. And I think we met, I don't know, it was probably around mile 80 or 90.
Adam, just for folks that might not know what the Moab 240 is, I know you two savages think everybody in the world knows what it is, but give our audience an idea of what that is.
It's roughly a 240 mile foot race, so an ultra marathon that, you know, circumnavigates Moab, a big loop, mostly on trail, that goes out and around the beautiful desert that surrounds Moab.
So, there you go. I call it an all-you-can-eat running buffet.
Perfect.
Well said.
Yeah, exactly. So Aaron and I met, it was the beginning of, maybe late morning of day two, probably somewhere around mile 80 or mile 90. I'm not exactly sure the pinpoint mileage there, but somewhere in that neighborhood. And I was just recently off of a very rough spell. At mile 70, I almost dropped from the race. And then I connected with another guy and ran with him, and the three of us sort of linked up around this point in the race. And it was just great conversation, beautiful desert. And Aaron had run part of the race the year before, and he was, we were running at the base of this beautiful mesa, that was up on our left-hand side. It was just this tall, beautiful mesa, and the sun was shining, and Aaron's pointing down to the end of the mesa. And he's like, yeah, we're going down there, sort of like down to the end of this mesa and around. And we're like, holy shit. the trouble with the desert is you can see so far, you know, so it's like walking on the beach. You see something down the beach and you're like, oh, I'll be there in 10 minutes. Well, you know, it was another 4 hours before we got to the end of the mesa probably. But that's how we met. And then Aaron and I ended up spending the majority, I would say, of the rest of the race together. I mean, I think there was probably from that point, you know, maybe a 20 or 25 mile section that we weren't together, but there more or less the rest of the race we were together. And so we formed, you spend that amount of time with somebody in that kind of environment and you become friends really quickly. You talk about all sorts of things. And if the opportunity arises, I'm happy to share some funny stories. You know, just to tip people off, Aaron did try to take a trail nap in the middle of the night on a cactus and all sorts of, you know, interesting things that we were both seeing out in the middle of the night. But anyway, I'll turn it over to Aaron to give a more robust background about himself. But yeah, it's great to see you and great to reconnect.
It's funny that you remember it largely like I do, because after day two, I always have in this mind, like, what was real and what was imagined? Because those worlds are just, I don't know if they converge or diverge or what that is, but your recollection of how we met is very much aligned with mine, which is kind of refreshing, because I think if we had met later in the race, we wouldn't really be able to probably tell how we met. We just know that we are walking together or whatever.
That's it.
Yeah. So, but it's funny. But yeah, that's how we met. A little bit more about me. 51 years old, wife, four kids, all girls, growing up fast. You know, I live, as I said, here in Ogden, Utah. Grew up in Michigan, been out in the West for 20 years or so, something like that. And moved out probably largely for family reasons, but also we love the West, just the lifestyle that it presents to us out here. Professional background, I think we kind of covered. Sports background, I've been running since for at least 40 years. And then have a background in competitive running, competitive cross-country skiing, a little bit of bike racing, triathlon, both a little bit of on-road and more off-road triathlons. So I've been doing endurance sports for a very long time, to say the least. And so Moab is something that came under my radar, I think when the first year the race came out, call it 5 years ago, something like that. Maybe it was six, but, you know, I forget exactly how many years ago it was. But that's been on my radar since the day that race first came out. And then something that I've been wanting to do and actually tried to do last year, but ultimately finished this year. And literally, I've been thinking about this race for 5 years, trying to figure out, you know, what would it take to do this. And it was awesome that one, that we had a chance to meet. And you're right, we could spend hours telling all the crazy stories about the experiences that we have. And maybe we'll highlight some of them here and try to at least make them relevant to folks. But yeah, 5 years later, I finally got it done, which has been, you know, something I'm obviously quite proud of, but still, you know, can't fully process yet either as well, too. It's just like this crazy, big, ridiculous thing that we did.
It was interesting when we were connecting in preparation for this, I can't remember how you said it, but, you know, you had alluded to the fact that you thought at the end of this one, you know, because you hadn't finished prior and this time you did, and you thought not that there would be like an epiphany, but there would be some like deeper meaning or some closure or something like that. And you're like, that still hasn't hit yet. Like, I'm still processing this whole thing, which I totally believe. And I find this fascinating.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I'm still not quite there, although I think I'm closer. And I've had some time to think about that. Like, why is that? Why? Because you're right. I thought I get across the finish line, I pick up my belt buckle, and I'd just be like, okay, cool. That made total sense. Like, I check it off the list, did that, and I get it all. I understand it. And that was enriching and rewarding and cool and great. Got it. You know, park it in my knowledge cap. But it hasn't worked like that. And so I'm getting closer, but I'm still not there. And Adam, I love your thoughts a little bit on it as well, too. And I think the reason I haven't closed the gap is as much as I had a lot of planning and preparation and kind of curiosity about, you know, how would it take to do this race? And as you mentioned, you know, I didn't finish it last year and I ultimately finished it. And I was kind of more like, how did I finish it? Like, I know that I did, but, and I know what I put into it. And I, you know, like I said, I've been working on it for 5 years. But like, how did I do that? Like, looking back, like, seriously, how did I do that? And the experiences that we went through, some of them were just so deep and complex that when you stack them all together, you think, my God, I know that I did it. It's not that I can't believe that I did it. And I know I had the confidence to do it, but I still don't fully know how I did it.
Yeah. What do I say to that? I mean, I think, you know, oftentimes people ask, and I'm sure you've gotten this question a lot, Aaron, is, you know, how do you do something like that? And to me, that's not the question that I ask myself. It's more around, why do I do something? Yeah. You know, whether it's Moab or it's anything, you know, anything in life or in business, it's around the why. And I think if there's, for me personally, you know, I'm an N of one, but for me personally, if there's a really meaningful why, something that's much bigger than myself, you know, not like I want to see how tough I am or, you know, how long my legs can go, you know, that stuff is not why I'm there. But if there's a really meaningful why, and you and I talked about some of these things in the middle of the night, I think if you're connected to, if I'm connected to that why, and it's really meaningful to me, then the how falls in place, because you no longer think about the how. You only think, I shouldn't say you, I'm talking about myself here. I only think about the why, and I keep connecting to the why, and the how becomes almost like just a happenstance. You know, it just sort of falls in place, you know, like one foot in front of the other type of thing. So I don't know if I answered, I don't know if it was a question, but I don't know if I added on to your thought there about the how, but that's how I sort of, you know, my how is very much connected to the why.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's interesting because the how is really simple. Like, this isn't complicated. And you said it. You put one foot in front of the other. Like, that's the task at hand. No matter what you're going through, where you're at, and how much you're suffering, how tired you are, it still boils down to that. You can sit there and complain and mope and feel sorry for yourself, or you can get one foot in front of the other. But if you're just going to sit and mope, you might as well tap out. It doesn't do you any good. But if you get up and put one foot in front of the other, you're eventually going to get there. So that's really simple. Like, the practice is simple. The how is simple, I guess, in practice. It's all the other things around it that get you to realize that all you need to do is put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah. Yeah. And my wife and I were just talking about Moab the other day, and she was asking me a little bit about what I love so much about these longer ultra races. And I was, Regan, you'll like this. I was sort of reminding her, it's the same, I feel about these ultra races the same way that I do about some of the longer river trips that we've done. Mm-hmm. And just for people listening, Regan and I, you know, we're originally friends and, you know, kayakers, and have spent quite a bit of time on the river together. And just a few years ago, we did the Grand Canyon together. So we were out there for quite a while, but it's the simplicity, which is crazy to say out loud, because getting to the starting line or getting to the put in, you know, if a big river trip or the starting line of an ultra race is complex, there's a lot going on, right? There's a lot of dynamic.
Simple, right?
Right. Yeah. But when you get there and when you push into the water or you take that first step after the gun goes off, everything else just melts away. Yeah. And life becomes very simple. You know, you're, aside from navigation potentially in an ultra race, your phone's off.
Yeah.
You know, what you need is on your back or in your boat. The people that you want to spend time with are there, or maybe you're by yourself, or maybe you connect with, you know, people that you want to spend time with along the way, but it's very, very, very simple. And I'm attracted to that because, to be quite honest, a lot in life and a lot in society doesn't make sense to me these days, how big and complex and hard we as a human race like to make things. And these are opportunities in life to sort of reconnect with what's important, at least what's important to me. And that ties in a little bit to the why as well.
No, I totally agree. And I think we see things very similarly there. I think, you know, the whys are important, and maybe we dig into that just a little bit. I think I had a couple of whys, and two I'll just highlight, which really, I've got four kids, and it was important for me to be able to set an example to them that, hey, you know, you're going to do hard things in your life and you can do it. And they saw me not only, you know, tracking me during the race and watching me do the race, but they saw everything I put into it, you know, and then they saw the final product. And that was, as a father, that was really important to me. So they understood, like, man, you got to work for things. Mm-hmm. You might get lucky occasionally, but not consistently. You're just not going to. So you need to dig in and work and really plan and prepare and do the work. And if you do that, you can do anything,
mm-hmm.
anything. Kids are, look at the whole world in front of them, young, bright, you know, well-positioned for anything, mm-hmm. but they got to do the work. So I think that was one issue. And the other issue is related to my wife as well too. She's going through some hard health issues, and she doesn't have a choice about dealing with things that are hard and difficult. She has to do it. And that provided a lot of strength to me. And it also helped me understand that we're all going to go through something like that, hard things eventually. It's just inevitable. It's just the reality of life is, you know, you're going to go through hard times. And it helped me kind of prepare, I think. Doing something really hard made it perhaps me position me better to do hard things later or even now as well, too. It's like practice, preparation, and a controlled and safe environment. But the other part related to me personally was just this curiosity. As I said, like this first race first came out, like it wasn't, you know, could I do something like that? But it's more like, what would it take to do a race like that? Like, just think about that for a second. What would it take? You got to like running. Okay. We get that. Cause it's a lot of running, but it's more than that too. And it was just, it was this curiosity question that, you know, I applied to the race that I applied to a lot of parts of my life as well too, which is like, God, what is it going to take to make something big like that happen? And I think a lot of people lose that. Like when you hear about something absurd, like the Moab race, when I talk to people about it, you kind of get a couple different responses. One is, well, that's ridiculous. You know, you have a midlife crisis, or doesn't that, you know, destroy your knees or something like that? It's kind of a small group. And then there's another group that kind of says, oh, boy, that makes the 5K that I did, or, you know, whatever, the marathon that I did look like nothing. I'm like, well, that's not really great either. That's not really the intention of me telling you about this. But then there's another group that says, geez, how did you train for that? Or where do you sleep? Like, they're curious. And I have that same curiosity. And I think that's whether you're trying to run a ridiculously long race, or trying to finish a project, or hit a sales target, or whatever the case may be, dealing with a, you know, challenging family situation, it's the easier route to dismiss it and come up with a reason why you can't do something or why it won't be relevant for you. It's a lot more productive, I found, to be curious and ask questions about, like, how could I do that? Or even if I don't run 240 miles, like, how did you do it? Like, ask questions, be curious, because you just never know where it might take you.
That's a really cool framing. You know, both the first point you brought up around kind of like choosing to embrace discomfort, right? It's like the choice to go do hard things as opposed, you know, I think a lot of humans strive for comfort, right? The goal is to retire and not work anymore. The goal is to, you know, go sit on the beach and read a book and chill out. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with either of those things. But, you know, the ability to like grow and learn and challenge yourself kind of is this core human condition. And I think a lot of people run away from that adversity or run away from that challenge. And I just like the mindset of like always trying to be a white belt, always learning and always challenging yourself to do new cool things. The other piece that you brought up is just that that curious mindset is, I think, a key driver probably for you in your personal life, but it sounds like that carries over into some of the professional life as well, which is, you know, curiosity at its core forces one to ponder and ask questions, which then elicits certain responses, which then by default you can kind of parse through and begin to synthesize and thematize things, but you've got like information and context kind of coming your way, as opposed to having a more rigid framework that you're operating from, which is like, I am a round peg. I only operate in, you know, certain environments that allow me to be successful, et cetera, et cetera. So again, whether that analogy is working or not, I really like the concept there for so many reasons, but I see how it applies to work life, family life, personal life, et cetera.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, once you realize that, like you apply it to doing a large, ridiculously long race, if you start applying it in work as well too, it's amazing how many times you realize you run into barriers. Like you want to try to get something done and somebody will tell you, I can't do it for this reason, versus, hey, what would it take to do this? Totally different perspective, frame it around. And, you know, I work for an amazing company, but we're a big, broad, complicated organization. And you run into these barriers, I call them, all the time. People that aren't aligned with the do what you want to do. And their initial response is, you know, no, or some version of no, versus how? Like, what could we do? And Adam, you and I lived it. Like, we ran into all sorts of problems out there.
Yeah.
That the first time we ran into a problem, we weren't going to just stop and go, okay, I guess we'll just stand here. Like, no, you got to find out, figure it out.
Yeah. And I mean, we were just having this interesting conversation with another one of the people that we work with named Ben, who we're going to record a podcast conversation with in a couple of few weeks. But we were talking about fear. And the whole time that we were talking about fear, I was thinking about freedom. And I think the reason for that is, for me personally, right on the other side of fear is this whole world of freedom. Because if you can get comfortable with whatever it is that you're afraid of, you know, or you just like accept it, and it's, the whole world opens up into a place of opportunity. So it's like what you're talking about, challenges on the trail, you know, when things go wrong, it's, I think our approach and every other racer out there, for the most part, their approach was probably not, this thing is going to go perfect. It was probably, okay, I have a plan. The plan is nice to stand on the starting line and feel like I did the work.
Yeah.
But I know that something is going to go haywire, or many something is going to go haywire. But those are opportunities to unlock something inside yourself that you never knew existed, because how would you know until you live it?
Yeah.
You know? And so, I mean, it could be something simple like running 240 miles with feet that were covered in blisters. Like, you know, thinking about that before you do it seems very unlikely, you know, the pain that that must cause. But once you do it, you realize, well, actually the pain goes away, and there's tape, and there's this, and there's that. And so it becomes an opportunity to see things just a little differently. It's like a tool for opening up perspective. And I find that so fascinating. But another point, you, as you were sharing what you were talking about there, Aaron, you reminded me of a story. When I first got started working out of college, I was, I don't know, in my early 20s, real early 20s, 22, 23. And I ended up having an opportunity to become CEO of the staffing company that was owned by a group of investors. And I accepted the job under one condition, and that was I wanted access to these investors, you know, because I had no idea what I was doing. I said, look, if you guys will, you know, basically mentor me and give me access to your knowledge, I'll do it. And they said, okay. They gave me an office in their office, and off we went. But there was one day, and I was talking to the chairman of the board. His name was John, and we were talking about, I think we were getting ready to acquire this competitor. And I was telling him all these reasons why I didn't think it was a good idea, why we couldn't do it. And he looks at me and he said, Adam, you got to stop thinking about why you can't do something and start thinking about why you can.
Exactly.
I promise you guys, there probably hasn't been one day that's gone by since that day that I haven't thought about that very statement. Because that is the best, single-handedly the best life and business advice I've ever received.
I couldn't have said it better. It's probably one of the reasons why you finished the Moab race.
Mm-hmm.
Because you understood that.
Yeah.
And that was a gift they gave you. That knowledge and understanding is priceless.
It's priceless.
Yeah.
It's priceless. And it, you know, all these things that we're talking about, you know, Moab, whether it's Moab or, you know, a 5K, if somebody is running a 5K for the first time and this feels hugely audacious and hard and scary to them, well, guess what? It's the exact same thing as Moab was to us.
You got it.
So for anyone out there who may judge themselves on distance, please don't, because the distance does not matter. It's what feels challenging to you is that's what matters. And I just think once you take a step in that direction, it's a tool to unlock, as you said, you're curious about maybe human potential, maybe, what's available, what you can do, how you can give back, whatever the case may be. But once you start to unlock that and practice it in life, fellas, I mean, things change and they change dramatically. And then the world opens up quite a bit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's, you know, you're taking some calculated risks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a race like Moab, you might not finish. I didn't. First time. You come back, figure it out. You learn. You adapt and grow. Try it again. See what you learned. Be curious. Why didn't I finish? What could I do better? What could I do differently?
Right.
Figure it out. It's an opportunity.
We get a chance to see.
Go ahead. Adam, sorry.
We get a chance to talk to a lot of our clients, our partners, in the more professional world about that very thing. And it's, you know, really around your relationship with failure.
Yeah.
And if you can celebrate failure and you can learn, if people can learn to realize that failure is just a part of success. It's just part of the process. And in fact, I might even say it's a critical part of the process.
Yeah.
You know, but if you can learn to embrace failure as a path to sort of, you know, evolve or get better, reach your goals, or however you want to frame it, then that makes these things so much more palatable and attainable to you.
Totally agree. I finished Moab for lots of reasons, but probably because I didn't finish it the year before. Mm-hmm. And I had an opportunity to learn and grow. Mm-hmm. I could have used it as an opportunity to say, I'm never doing that race again. I'm not running again. The race is stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, people that do that are nuts. Or you could have gone a totally different path.
Mm-hmm.
But I took a different path, and you know, I may not have finished last year too, but we did.
But we did.
Yeah. And I had not, I'd come back next year and do it.
Absolutely.
So, because it's just an opportunity, but yeah, it's an opportunity to something absurd, but fun, running a long ways. But it's the same lesson. You're right. It's the same lesson in life. It's the same lesson in work. Find mm-hmm. ways to do things. Just try that for a while. It's amazing how things shift.
Yeah.
I think it comes full circle to your piece around curiosity. I mean, fear of failure, fear of heights, fear of whatever paralyzes people to kind of limiting and compartmentalizing themselves in ways that are limiting, right? They limit their exposure, they limit their risk tolerance, you know, whatever it may be. And so, but by being curious and exploring and being willing to either be vulnerable in the moment or try something new or suck at something, like people don't like to suck, you know, they want to be good at stuff. And we award and support and honor and praise people that are experts in jujitsu or work or have the fancy title, when in fact, you know, being a white belt in something as an adult is scary. Learning new skills is scary. And those that kind of embrace that, and in business, Adam, to your point, I just wanted to second that, like, you know, we get exposure to so many different very senior leaders, emerging leaders, business owners, founders, you know, some work in very large institutions and organizations like you, Aaron, and none of them have done it perfectly, right? I mean, the idea is like, once you kind of get in the muck, everybody, like the darlings of Wall Street, when you lift the hood up on those organizations, it is a shit show. And, nope. And nobody can tell me otherwise. Like I've seen it. We've been in the engine room tinkering around, and they're messy and complicated. And it's not because everything's running perfect. It's because somebody or groups of people are like, look, we got to get from point A to point B, and there's stuff in the way. Like, we need to figure out how to get through it, around it, over it, under it. If the front door isn't working, then try the back door, climb down the chimney. But this ingenuity, this perseverance, this curiosity, right? Asking questions, it's just is a huge component. So.
Yeah, agreed. It's funny. Maybe two quick stories on that. I agree. Like, things are messy. They just are. And you have to know that and be comfortable with that. And Adam, I think we were talking, maybe I was talking to Jeff about it. Maybe it was last year with my crew and Pacers. I'm like, you watch the race progress in Moab and everybody starts off with, like, you know, clean clothes and their socks are all pulled and the socks match, you know, and they got their best stuff on. Then you watch the race progress and then you maybe see them at the halfway part and like somebody's shirt is on backwards. And yeah, their socks, they're wearing two different pairs of socks. You don't really notice, but if you really observe, you realize, like, you know, things aren't quite as put together as they were, you know, 100 miles or so ago. And then when you watch them come down the last 3 miles, and I'm sure you felt like it at this, but I sure did too. But when you watch people come in, I joke, it's like they got like a bird's nest hanging from them. You know, they got like a yard sale of clothes and just, you know, stray dogs following them around. There's just like, it's just this ugly story that's been built over four or five days that you just see to come together. And you just realize, like, they've been through hell.
Yeah.
Absolutely hell.
Yeah.
But they're smiling from ear to ear, and they freaking did it.
Yeah.
And it's that context that, like, you don't get there according to a plan. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be fun all the time. But that's what makes it fun, I think, as well, too, and challenging as well, too. And it is. These things turn into total shit shows.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
It is.
Absolutely beautiful.
It is.
Shit show. I love it.
It is. It is. But why can't work be like that, too? Why can't life be like that, too? Right? You got a young child. I have 4 kids. Day in the life around here is the same way. I got cats yelling at me, and dogs want things from me, and doorbells ringing and, you know, life going on. It's a total shit show too.
Yeah.
But I love it. I wouldn't change it for anything.
Yeah.
I second that. Yeah. Aaron, what else? I mean, just even kind of building on that, not having to stay on that thematically, but, you know, given your time on the earth and given the experiences you've had both at work and doing some of these races, you know, what are some other, I don't know, pillars or concepts or themes that seem to be kind of central in your worldview or your professional view? I know we had touched on a couple. I'm just curious to get you to raise maybe one or two more.
Yeah, maybe build on the last story I told about things turning into a shit show. And the reason you can get through an event like that is because you improvised and you were flexible and you overcame. And I think flexibility is just a big thing in our lives. Like, I'm inherently a planner. Like, if you see all the planning that I went through over these 5 years to make all this come together. But as Adam and you and I talk, and we saw firsthand, plan doesn't mean a damn thing after about, you know, mile 140.
Yep.
100%. No plan can account for any of that. And you got to stay flexible. I mean, I don't know if you saw it, but like, if you were there when I was hallucinating and you're like, well, okay. You know, I just saw Grimace, the McDonald's character, and he was waving at me, but okay, I'm just going to go with that. Right. But you see other crazy things, you experience other crazy things. And I think as much as you read about those things happening for people who've done races before, like once you start experiencing it, I think you just have to learn, like, nothing I can do about that. I got to let that go and just keep going. Like, keep it simple. How you get there is kind of, and when you get there, I guess, is you have to learn to let some of those plans go out the window and just fall back on what you know has worked for you in the past. Like, have some confidence. Like, I've had a great career. I'm 51 years old and I'm having a great life. And some of that was an accident, some of it wasn't. It gives me great confidence to know that the rest of my life is going to be probably a lot like my life so far. Ups mm-hmm. and downs, but overall, it's going to be a great life. So have confidence in that, but also stay flexible as well. As much as you can have a plan, you can have an idea about how this is going to go, whether it's running this race or completing a big project at work, whatever the case may be. Like, have a framework for what you want to do, because I certainly did, but also know that only gets you so far.
Yeah.
And when that plan starts to come unraveled, go off the rails, that's actually an opportunity for fun and curiosity. It opens the window back up. Like, things aren't going how I thought they're going to go. What am I going to do about it?
You reminded me of two things. The first is this phrase, make one decision that eliminates all these other decisions that you may have to make. I forget who said it or where I read it, but I love it. And I'll explain in a second. And the second one is, don't forget to celebrate the journey, because I tell you what, the outcome, you know, the finish line in our
yeah.
circumstance. I mean, Aaron, you and I don't really talk about the finish line.
No.
We talk about all the stuff that went on for those 5 days during the race, right? The journey is what's important. The journey is where the magic happens. The journey is when, you know, if you're lucky enough to be old and, you know, at the end of your life, looking back, you're going to think about the journey. You're not going to think about, you know, the project outcome or the race outcome or the finish line or all the other stuff. You're going to think about what took place to get there, right? But the phrase, make the one decision that eliminates you from having to make all the other decisions. Mm-hmm. I love that. Gosh, I wish I would have written it down where I saw it or who said it or what have you. But as we were leading up to Moab, and you know, I was no crew, no pacers on the start line, and you know, I was working with my coach and I was planning drop bags and I had the spreadsheet and I had all the stuff. And at the end, I, you know, right before the race started, I said, you know what, Adam, you've got enough experience in the mountains now. You need, just carry enough stuff with you beyond the mandatory gear so that if you miss a drop bag or you miss an aid station at a planned amount of time, you have enough to get through any situation that arises. And so I did that. I had a little extra weight. Not too much, but I carried enough stuff to withstand any situation. And that one decision, Aaron, I think eliminated me from having to make all sorts of other treacherous decisions along the way, you know, out of my mind and tired and hungry and what have you, because I knew no matter what happened, no matter where we were on the trail, I'd be okay because I had enough on my back to get through.
It gave you that capacity to adapt, I suppose, right? You kind of put in some contingency cushion in there, a little bit of buffer that said, unknown things are going to come up. And by definition, I don't know what they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's be fair for those folks who are listening. I finished 26 hours beyond my goal time. 26 hours.
I was about 20 hours. Yeah. I like forget that plan.
Yeah. That plan's out the window, but that's a great lesson.
Yeah.
I think to take away, you know, especially in business, especially as, or in life and whatever, you know, as you're thinking about something audacious or you're moving towards an end goal, a project, a program, or what have you, look, it may not, that desired outcome may not look and feel and be exactly like the way you visualized it or you planned it, but it may be a heck of a lot better. You may get a lot more out of the process. If, as you suggested, you remain curious and you remain flexible, those two things in and of itself will open up so much more opportunity than being that rigid person that's, you know, doing whatever needs to be done to stick to that plan.
Yep. No, I couldn't have said it better. I think you're both right. We both had these ideas. I remember when we first met, we had ideas of what our finishers time was going to be, and they're very, very close. And then as the days went on, we realized that's not going to happen.
That's not happening.
But, you know, if you let your ego get a hold of you, you can say, well, I'm just going to quit. I'm not going to make it with my goal.
Yep.
So I'm going to purposely quit or find a reason to quit, you know, come up with something I can justify and tap out.
I think it might have even inspired us to have a better time.
You know, it did.
You know, I mean, I think about the Pole Canyon aid station and, you know, after getting my feet taped up and I come around the corner and you're stretched out in this like lounge chair with blankets over you, having a laugh, and there's, you know, you're eating and, you know, we're just like, we're having a good time, you know, and it's, you're not driving towards a specific time because what does it matter?
It didn't matter. We had a blast. I mean, we're at 184 miles into this ridiculously long race. We're at like 8,400 feet elevation. We've got to go through this section with, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 feet of climbing and almost that much descending, like this crazy next section. And we're just sitting down laughing.
Having a blast.
Yeah. It was a total riot.
Yeah.
Total riot. And we had so many more fun events like that. I mean, same thing. Like we could have suffered and been a lot faster, but to what end? At some point you just realize like you're kind of missing it. Like we were tired. We sat down and slept in a ditch.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. So a couple of times. You know, you're like, why not? We got time. We're not chasing cutoffs.
Yeah.
So let's just go have some fun with this.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, they say a true adventure really begins when the plans go out the window. And, you know, on many a river trip or, you know, running a rapid or running a race, those, you know, you can only control and influence so much. And when nature or time or, you know, the elements, you know, throw a curveball your way, you do have to be adaptable. And I think in the workplace, it becomes very obvious who has that skill set and mindset, who doesn't, right? We run into people that are rigid in their thinking and rigid in their adaptability. And, you know, they actually perform quite well when the plan is clear, the resources are there, you know, and it's like execute and go. And they do very, very poorly when it's ambiguous. You know, you have to respond and react to a myriad of inputs all at the same time, you know, and kind of go back to the drawing board. So again, you see this in life, but definitely people get exposed in the workplace when that happens. And, you know, when you're in a team or a department that has to collaborate with another team or department and you have two different views of how to get work done, I feel like that's where some of those friction points occur in organizations, right? Especially cross-functionally. But again, just highlighting thematically and building some of those bridges between some of the stuff you guys are talking about on the ultra endurance runs and the lessons learned and application to just different aspects of life and work as well.
Yeah, it's amazing the overlap, for sure. They're everywhere. I feel like I'm doing some of my best work in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
After that race. Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah. Because of the world.
Is there anything, I'm curious, I'm not looking for an answer. I just wonder if the opposite is true. Like, is there anything that has like been forged on the work front that has then carried over to some of the, you know, personal or kind of endurance side. I see that that might not be quite as common or obvious, but I'm just curious if there's anything that stands out.
Yeah, I think one thing does stand out a little bit, but it started in my life experience, I suppose, in work, but I realize it actually applies in things like ultra running. And I'll tie this into you as well, too. Like my initial crew in the Pacer, Jeff, one of my best friends out there. He's one of my best friends, but we actually started to work together. And one of the reasons we're so tight is because we've done work things together that are almost as ridiculous as running 240 miles. Really, really tough, hard projects. Kind of the same thing. Like you start out there and like you inherited this total mess. Everything around you is just complete dysfunction. How do you turn it into something good? And we've done that together. We've been through things like that together multiple times over a long period of time. To say like we've been in the trenches together, right? We're just fighting through ugly stuff. And I've always said that, like your best work relationships can really turn into some of your best friend relationships as well too, because you've done hard things together. And I learned that at work first through just some really good work opportunities I've had to do hard work things. And that gave me confidence to do something like Moab as well too. Like I'm going to surround myself with good people. So Jeff, who's a great work peer, partner, influence on me, just have him right there with me. Yeah. Because I know I'm going to trust him and he feels the same. So surround yourself with good people. Adam, that's why we hit it off right away. I'm like, a good person. And then go do hard things together. And so for me, I learned that at work. And it allowed me to apply that to running a long ways.
Super cool.
Yeah,
I have two questions for you, Aaron. I mean, the first one is, are we pacing Jeff next year at Moab or what?
Jeff, I've told him a few times he doesn't realize that he's signing up for the race, but he is.
Yeah.
And so he's gone quiet and on a few of those text responses.
We might need to sign him up.
I'm sure we could do that. So yeah. It's funny because, and I told him he could do this, as you know. Right. We have the work experience, the same work experience I just applied, said, help me get through the race. He has it because I did it with him. Mm-hmm. And he's seen me through this race and he's done other hard things before from an athletic perspective. Yeah, absolutely. He could. Absolutely. Could.
So. And then the second question I have is, are you any different in your leadership role at work having completed Moab? Maybe you're not different, but is there any, like, did you take away anything from that event, that experience that you consciously use with your team at work that you see really has a positive impact?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think two things come to mind and you can relate to this too. When you come into an aid station long, late in the race in the middle of the night, and you're just worn down and beat and you don't have a choice. You have to put yourself into other people's hands, medics and aid station volunteers who are all suffering and sacrificing great things to be there. Mm-hmm. Have all chosen to be there and want to be there to help you. And you have to let them help you. Mm-hmm. And I realize work's much the same as well too. Everyone I work with applied for a job to work at this company. They wanted to be here. If they didn't want to be here, they would have left. They're here now because they want to be. Hopefully, right? That's just it. And they want to help. You have to learn to let them help you.
Yeah. What's one thing that I think I just yesterday, somewhere on social media, I got like a post from Joe DeSana, that he's the founder of like the Spartan race, you know, formats. And obviously he must have been fielding a question about like what's the hardest things he's ever done, and he's like, look, these races that people do, like, they're hard, but he's like, if you want to go do something, if you want to do the hardest thing in life, like, go start a business, right? Yeah. He's like, people think that like it's easy or it's not as hard as it really is. He's like, there's no aid stations, there's no there, like, rubbing your feet and popping blisters for you. He's like, it is the most audacious, brutal, you know, like, life lesson event that you can possibly do. And so oftentimes I think, you know, people almost inverse the two, like all these crazy worker bees that go to work and do their things and are leaders are like shocked by you guys doing a Moab 240 and rightfully so. But in many ways, they're almost like, I don't want to say numb or oblivious to the fact of how hard it is to do the thing that they're actually doing, which is brutally hard. And if you're a founder, let alone just somebody that goes to work every day, I mean, we speak to founders every day, and to just hear them unwind the, you know, their mental space, the psychology behind it, the stress they put on themselves, and they love it, but it's also this whole plethora of other things that they feel so much responsibility for. It's pretty wild.
It's interesting. I can imagine you might feel lonely if you let it.
Absolutely.
It is lonely.
And I think, you know, to kind of piggyback on what you were saying, like, by default, the role is lonely, but I think that's where founders need to find support structures and outlets and quote unquote pacers, right, that can come along for part of the journey. And oftentimes that's the role that we play for them. They reach out to us. The savvy ones reach out to us because they know that we can offer support, advice, coaching, facilitation, whatever it may be, because we're not their husband or wife or significant other. We're not their board member. We're not their co-founder. And sometimes as a founder or just a leader, like sometimes you need a cheerleader, right? You're in the depths and you need somebody to be like, you can do this, dude. Like, I know you don't know you can do it, but I know you can do it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to pump you up a little bit. Other times people need a kick in the ass. They're just like complaining or victim or woe is me. And you're like, no, you said you're going to do this and you're going to follow it through. And I'm the accountability. I'm the face to this accountability for you. And then other times they just need somebody to like vent and purge and like pressure test them. And I think, again, depending on whether that is a friend, a colleague, or a paid professional like ourselves, like to be able to be aware enough to know that that is worth its weight in gold, regardless of what that is key. And so it does become less lonely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think surrounding yourself with some people that can help, regardless of what that help is, and just know that they're out there and they're vested in your interest too,
mm-hmm.
it is extremely rewarding. I think we could have run our own race. I could have looked at you and said, hey, kept going. Mm-hmm. And you could have said,
mm-hmm.
we won't be here talking today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
All the experiences that we've had.
Yeah. Right.
And we could talk for hours about all the experiences that we had.
Days, maybe.
Maybe, probably. Put her head down, got through an aid station, just got what I needed.
Yeah.
Got out of there, slept in the dirt by myself,
mm-hmm.
and got it done.
Mm-hmm.
What would I have to show for it? I'd mm-hmm. have a belt buckle.
Yeah.
It's nice, but yeah, it's kind of not the point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different kinds of people out there, and different people need different things. But having a support system in place, whatever that looks and feels like, that works for you or whomever in that current situation is so important, you know. And there could be even those people that run races like Moab and they burn through aid stations and they don't connect with others and they do the thing. I'd be willing to bet that somewhere along that race, they had at least one connection or one experience with another person that refilled their cup, figuratively and literally, that gave them what they needed to take that next step forward. And so I think you guys were spot on there. The more that we all can embrace the fact that life can be richer with, you know, better connection, better support, better service to and from others, you know, I think the world just gets to become a better place with Absolutely. Those things.
Totally. Yeah, just have to open yourself to it. And maybe it takes running for a couple of days straight to let their guard down and beat enough to where you will actually ask for help or accept help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But get to that point. There's a lot of people there, regardless where you're at, will help you, want to help you. They'd feel better helping you. That's what they want.
Yep.
It was fascinating for us when we were watching Adam, you know, our whole team, it was kind of my family was tracking him. We were having texts in the background and stuff. But, you know, there was one gentleman in particular that was just blitzing the thing. And there was a female racer who was pretty young. I want to say in her early 20s or something, doing the same. Yeah. And I guess my question is less about them, but those folks are literally like, are they just grabbing bites at these aid stations and drinking some water and like, they just don't stop? Are they just plowing through that thing? Because they finished the race in an absurdly fast time.
Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to run the Whole Canyon aid station 2 years ago, 3 years ago, something like that, mile 184. And so first runner came through, he had a 4-hour lead, came through at like 2:30 in the morning, and I clocked him. So he spent 8 minutes at Whole Canyon aid station.
Wow. 8 minutes.
He came in, he's like, oh, that was a hard section. It's very conversational. I'm like, what can I get you? He's like, you have any vegan dogs? I'm like, no, I got regular dogs. He goes, I'm vegan, but okay. And then he's like, throw that out the window. I'll just, whatever.
Pork sounds great. Just give it to me.
I'm going to eat. And he's like, okay, I'll get one to go. And we gave it to him, topped off his water, and off he went. I remember just watching him because it was during the night. You know, that climb out of Pole Canyon is legit. Rugged alpine, you know, high altitude, rugged stuff. And he's the first person to go up. So all the mountain lions and black bears and cows and cattle and all that stuff, none of them have been cleared off. You know, he's going to go basically clear all that for everyone else. Mm-hmm. So, wow. That was really impressive. And so, you know, we still had a nice conversation. It was pleasant and conversational, but I think we spent an hour and 45 minutes there. So, yeah. And we made the most of it. We had an absolute blast. But, you know, we were kind of running different races, I suppose, as well, too. But for context, that's about, you know, what they spend.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Aaron, what's coming down the pike for you? What, you know, whether that's personally or professionally or just kind of where's your head at? And what are you looking forward to? I mean, we're wrapping up 2022. For most of us, it's been a pretty intense, interesting year. I don't know. I mean, great in many ways and lots of lessons learned, but I, you know, pretty much across the board, people are like, whew, like it's December and I can't believe it's December. And also like, thank goodness it's December. Yeah. You know, what's top of mind for you coming into the new year and what are you looking forward to in 23 or beyond?
Oh, well, the easy one was great. We're going to Disneyland, next weekend. So, like everything's been on that family. We're all just like, just counting on the days. Let's go to Disney.
It is such a fun place, man. It never disappoints either. Every time I've been there, I mean, you get the smiles with the kids, but I may have more fun than they do. So.
I probably do too. We'll come back. Hearts are full. We'll be a little bit broke, celebrate Christmas and just enjoy being together. And then, you know, going forward, work-wise, I started a new assignment, so I'll be busy with that. Writing-wise, I haven't decided. And I'm okay with that. Like, I know if I want to do Moab again, I've got to make that decision in January, but I'm not ready to make a decision. I don't really need to. So I'm kind of okay with just not really knowing and just keeping it simple for a while. So, that'll work for me until it doesn't. And then once I get restless and want to have something on the board to work towards, then that's what I'll do. I'll pick something and work towards it.
That's awesome. Earlier you had mentioned like you feel like you're doing some of your best work, and that's a great way to end the year, regardless of what the actual tasks or projects or initiatives are. But just to feel like that level of challenge and engagement and whatever else you want to kind of adjectives you want to use to describe that, that's cool.
Yeah, I'm going to run with it. Let it roll. Nothing's forever. Things are working right now. I'll go do that for a while. And if things change, I'll change, I suppose, right? So we'll see. Check back in a few months. We'll see.
The ultimate adaptability right there. If things change, I'll change. For now, I'm going to just ride this thing out. It's perfect.
Yeah.
That's it. Keep it simple.
Well, Aaron, it has been a total pleasure to have you. Adam, any final questions, comments, or anything for Aaron there?
Oh, I enjoyed the conversation, Aaron. I mean, it's just awesome. It's so good. I'm so happy that we met and we got to spend such a really quality amount of time together. And I'm just, you know, I'm pretty darn sure that we'll get another adventure under our belts together here at some point. And of course, if you do Moab, you know, you've got a pacer crew built into that too.
Yeah, the same. I suspect you have some plans or you're starting to think about having some plans as well too. So it'd be great to have an opportunity to go out and run to the middle of the night again with you or two.
Yeah.
And expand our thinking. I think I really enjoyed the conversation. I think
100%.
It's been a lot of fun. 100%. But now the challenge is just like, how do we learn even more? How do we stay curious about it? So we've done this, we experienced great things, but what are the new things? What else can we learn from it? And how do we build on this?
Yeah. My parting thought is, but before we hit record on this podcast, you were also bringing up joy as a really important, you know, aspect in all areas of life, professional, personal, what have you. And, I did sign up for Bigfoot, and I am doing Bigfoot next year. And what got me going into Bigfoot, and cause I ended up having to, put my name on the list pretty quickly there after Moab, was just pure joy, just pure fun that we had, and that experience being so rich. And I was just like, I want the chance of having something like that again.
Yeah.
It wasn't about running another 200-mile race. It wasn't about, you know, any kind of fitness goal. It was really, I want that feeling, that experience, that joy again.
Yeah. Well, let's do it.
Yeah. Cool.
I love it. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for your time. This was an absolute pleasure. And, you know, Adam speaks very highly of you, and, we're in your court. We're rooting for you, and please, reach out anytime. We'd love to support you, and, you know how to track us down, but thank you so much, for your time today. I learned a lot, and it's just so nice to get to know you a little bit better.
Thanks, guys. I enjoyed the conversation. It was a great opportunity and a blast. Enjoy us. We had a lot of fun. So thanks for your time.
There you go. Wrap up 2023 in December to the best of your ability. And we'll see you on the flip side.
Excellent.
Awesome.
All right, guys.